The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
Yet again, another great Hanson McLean's Money Matters coming up today.
And we'd like you to stay tuned as we talk to Maddie Dykewall from AgeWave. And she talks about how you could live for years and years and years and really enjoy it.
And have a new face of retirement. She's definitely an expert on it. And we're also going to talk about why you need to start planning for retirement now and not delay. So stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Providing guidance as you plan and transition into retirement for over two decades, here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're here with us today, being part of our program. We certainly appreciate those who listen to our show, as we've been doing for a long time.
And yes,
both myself and Pat here are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our days during the week meeting with people like yourself, at least some of the days. Not so much this last week, 4th of July week.
Nice, as always.
Much in the 4th of July, particularly when the 4th of July falls more midweek. Kind of nice because it...
Because you get reasons to take days off on either side of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's like the...
Come on.
Like the Monday is like, it's a good excuse for people like, well, I did a little emails, a few calls.
Who are we kidding?
4th of July is always one of my favorite...
Declaration of Independence, is that?
No, I don't think much about that.
I'm joking. Yeah.
I'm joking.
Actually, yeah, there's...
I always take appreciation. I always like my flags. I have a flag up and the stuff. They always have a little 4th of July decorations. And I tend to host people 4th of July, which I like to do. Various people.
Do you ever discuss the Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July?
I have everyone memorized.
How little the discussion about the meaning of it's like, oh, independence, but what a struggle it was to get people together to sign a declaration.
Yeah, you just didn't think about it. It's pretty heavy duty.
Well, if you look against the king. If you look at what's happening in other countries, you realize the struggle it was for our founders of the United States.
And what a blessing. Here we sit and talk about our retirement planning.
I know.
On our investments.
I know.
Beautiful country.
Not tyranny.
So that's why we're here at Hanson McLean and, of course, taking calls and talk about topics, and we're going to have a lot of fun today. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. Again, 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're in San Jose talking with Tom. Tom, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing, Scott, Pat? I have one question for both you guys. I retired from civil service at the end of last year with a small pension. It's about $3,000 a month. After my taxes, both federal, state, are deducted, and my little bit of deduction for health care.
Not a small pension.
I thought the same thing.
That is not a small
$4,000 gross.
It might be small relative to some of your friends, but it's not a small pension relative to the rest of the world.
Okay. The world. Yeah, put it on a global basis.
Okay, I'm
the universe.
I guess I'm comparing myself with our president. Anyway,
okay.
I am 64 years old, and I have not filed yet for my Social Security benefit. And at this point, if I filed now early, it'd be about $2,400 a month. My full retirement age is 66. My wife is currently 58 years old, still working full time. And she plans to continue for the next 5, maybe 6 years. Her current gross salary is $127,000 a year. And she has excellent health care coverage, which I'm under. So her employment buys us a very good health care policy.
Okay.
Our kids are both grown. My daughter just recently graduated. So our college obligations are done. My house is fully paid for, and we're completely debt free because I'm a very simple man, and we live a very simple lifestyle. We both.
And what's
have
your what's
combined,
your simple home in San Jose worth today?
One
of the hottest markets in the country.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere around $1.5 million.
Yeah, and how big is the house?
It's small. It's about 1,500 square
feet. Holy
And I'm just bringing this up for the listeners in other parts of the country.
Because that's reality.
In San Jose, it's just like your typical suburban neighborhood, right, Tom?
Exactly.
How old is your home?
It was built in 1928. So that's
got a little charm to it.
Craftsman.
Yeah.
Craftsman.
Yeah.
Just not.
So what's your question for us, Tom?
Well, you know, I'm wondering if I'm not dipped into Social Security. I haven't dipped into our 401, my TSP.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really need to at this point because of our.
How much is in your.
Pardon me?
How much is in your thrift savings plan?
In mine, it's about $1 million.
And how much is in your wife's?
About a half a million.
Okay. So the question is, should you start Social Security or start taking distributions from your thrift savings plan? Is that what you're wondering?
Well, you know, I don't think I even want to touch my TSP until later on when I'm 70 and a half and have to, because I don't think I need the money right now. But what I'm thinking about doing is converting some of it over to a traditional IRA. And then from there, because I can do that without a tax advance.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then from there, I can convert some of it into a Roth IRA if there's a means to do so.
Let me ask you this question.
I'm not employed.
Yes. That's 10 years out. Your wife is now retired. Where do you...
No, my wife is not...
No. We're 10 years in the future.
10 years.
Oh, okay.
We're 10 years in the future. And it's funny, Scott. I was going to ask exactly the same question.
What happens with working the same guy 20-some-odd years.
Yeah. So, and we're sharing a brain.
10 years from now, are you still living in San Jose?
Did you move to another state? Are you in exactly the same house?
We plan... This is our home. We plan to stay here.
Got
and
it.
Our kids are probably going to inherit it when we go.
Okay, so the idea of converting this money from your thrift savings plan to a Roth by whatever means necessary, I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't either. So right now you've got income north of $150,000 a year, right? Nice cash
yes.
flow. But when your wife retires, the majority of that's going to stop, right? Her salary is going to stop. Does she have a pension that's going to come in?
She had, when she first got employed, they had a defined benefit program, which they
killed
froze
it 20
back
years
in
ago. Yeah.
2012.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
On 2012.
So, but her locked in defined benefit whenever she retires and she has to be 65 or 62 to do so is locked in at about $3,000 a month.
So I would defer, Social Security and wouldn't touch the thrift savings plan.
I would agree. I did the same thing.
Unless
until
you're
your wife
in poor
retired.
Health. Unless you're in poor health, in which if you're in poor health or you think that you have less than a full life expectancy,
then take it now,
the Social Security. But if you think you have a normal life expectancy, then defer it.
Defer Social Security and
don't do anything.
Until your wife quit working.
Yeah.
That's the simplest way to replace that income.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this Roth IRA, not for me, but it's primarily it's money that I won't probably go through my entire 401 or my wife's.
But you're converting it at a high marginal tax rate right now because your wife's income, and that's why it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and in California, you're paying another nine. Do you have any kids that live outside of the state?
They both. Well, my daughter's down in San Diego. My son is in Minnesota.
So, you know, as much as you care about these kids and trying to get them tax-free income,
mm-hmm.
they'll have more assets. They'll have more after-tax. Odds are they'll have more after-tax income inheriting a larger taxable IRA than they would inheriting a smaller Roth IRA, which is what it would be because when you convert, you are voluntarily sending the government a tax check.
And at a high marginal rate because it's based on your total family income. So... I don't know what Minnesota's tax rates are, but I can assure you they're lower than the state of California.
Yes, of course.
I can assure you.
Yeah.
So the idea that you would actually pay voluntarily a high tax rate here when in Minnesota, some point in the future,
if your wife wasn't working?
We would probably consider converting
Let's say the only income you had right now is $2,400 a month for the family. we'd be tremendous advocates for doing a Roth conversion because you're in a lower tax bracket.
But you're not.
Your income's over $150,000. I can't see why it would make sense to convert at this point.
Yeah, I like going through the exercise.
Which you should do every year. I think it makes sense to think about this.
But it doesn't make sense for you to do it now.
Even with the fact that the Roth IRA grows essentially tax-free.
It's the same number.
So it's
the same number. If you took your IRA and paid tax on it.
Where's the money from the tax going to come from? Let's say you converted $100,000 and the IRS and the franchise tax board says you owe us $40,000. Where do you get the 40 grand?
It's going to come from your withdrawal.
Yeah. So now instead of having $100,000 taxable IRA,
you're going to have $140,000. Where's the money come from to pay the taxes on the $40,000 distribution? To pay the taxes on the $100,000 distribution,
you have less money in your retirement accounts. That's where it. Obviously, if you died and you left your kid either $1 million in a Roth IRA or $1 million in a traditional IRA. The Roth IRA would be clearly beneficial, but it would be more like if you converted the $1.5 million you have in deferred retirement accounts today, you'd be left with about $1 million. So now we're talking about you die and you've got $1 million in a Roth or a $1.5 million in a traditional. It's about the same. Most people would rather inherit $1.5 million traditional than $1 million in Roth.
Most people, yes.
Yeah.
So.
Continue thinking about this.
Yes.
This is not the year to do it.
And defer.
And if tax rates change, it might make sense later. Who knows? If we have a tax bill this year, it's not going to happen this year. But my opinion. But it might. If tax rates change next year, it might make sense. But doesn't in
today
right now.
At all.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you guys' input. That makes sense to me.
That's our opinion. Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. I wish you well.
I grew up at a 1,500-square-foot house that was never, ever worth $1.5 million.
Well, the house I grew up in high school, my father still lives there. It's 950 feet in Southern California.
How much is it?
Basin.
What do you think, a million?
Well, last I looked several years ago, it was worth about $700,000.
That's crazy. No wonder people have a hard time living in the...
Well, I left Los Angeles because I couldn't stand the traffic and
yeah.
the people. But not that I didn't... I like the people. There's just too many
the traffic,
of them.
Yeah. Nice.
I love people, just not too many at once.
Nice. All right. For the three people still listening in Southern California.
There's a lot of things great about it. I actually remember when I was in college, I was home for a summer. I had a summer job, and I'm on the 405 freeway. For whatever reason, in Southern California, the freeways, they put a the before the number.
Oh.
It's the 405.
Oh, the.
Yeah. Instead of highway, it's the 405. So I'm on the 405. It's stuck. It's traffic. There's no accident. I live 7 miles from my work, and it took me an hour and 20 minutes to get home. And I remember that day saying, I am not settling in Los Angeles.
I'm out.
Of course, I could have bought my dad's little house back then. I'm just kidding. I'm glad. It's a great place, and I love Southern California.
So I have a daughter at school down there and go to visit, and it's beautiful. It's the traffic. But my daughter loves it.
But listen to us.
Like, how old are we? You know, when I was a kid.
My stepfather used to hate being down there without the traffic. The way people drive in the freeways are so aggressive.
You know, when I was a kid. All right, let's go to the call.
Yeah, 1-888-2-HANSEN to join Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Love to take your call on anything financial. 1-888-2-HAN. S-O-N. Let's talk to Lori in Arizona. Lori, you're with Hanson McClain.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for being part of Hanson McClain.
My husband and I were hit hard during the real estate bubble.
Mm-hmm.
He has a secure job now, presently, and he's 63 years old. He plans to work forever, quote unquote.
Okay.
We have a short sale capital gains tax balance of $8,000. And we're still paying that off with no other debt.
Okay.
We're currently saving $1,000 per month in regular savings account with a balance of $5,000.
Got it.
And we have an HSA account funded minimally for $1,157.
Okay.
We're thinking about purchasing a house now while he is still working.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do under these circumstances?
So, how old are you? You said he is 63.
I'm 55.
And what's his approximate income?
It's about 56. That's with overtime.
Got it. And do you work outside the home?
No, I do side things.
Okay. Could you qualify for a loan? Is your credit good enough to qualify for a loan?
He just checked our credit. It's about 726, but again, okay, that's just with a card, with a Capital One check.
How much would a home cost you?
At this point,
200,000, 300,000.
Things have gone up in Arizona.
Are you asking what it would cost me or how much I would qualify for?
No.
What would a house cost?
We're in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So the average would be 220,000 in a good neighborhood.
Okay.
And even in a fair neighborhood, you're talking about 185.
Okay. And what do you pay in rent now?
$818.
So you bought on the lower end, $180,000, 30-year fixed rate. Do you have any other savings whatsoever?
No.
So the challenge is right now your rent is pretty low compared to what it's going to cost you on a monthly basis to be in a house.
And home prices have moved up considerably in the state of Arizona over the last 5 years. Is that correct? The recovery.
Especially now we have a boom. Now they're taking and really moving in.
I would continue to save the money and not be in a hurry to buy. But I would try to buy sometime in the next, 4 years.
If you are my sister, as a matter of fact, this week I was talking with my sister. I've got a sister who's 53. You're 55? Okay, she's 53.
I'm sure your sister will appreciate you sharing that with everyone.
I'm not going to. She doesn't look a day beyond 52. So it's, So one of the things we were talking about, we were talking about some career. She was asking her little brother for some advice. We were talking about what are some things she could be doing for her career at this stage for her best chance for financial success in the future. And so just to be real, so when I'm looking at your situation, your husband's 63, makes about 50. You're doing some odd things. For your best chance of having some financial security in your life, Lori, might be for you to say, all right, I'm Lori, I'm 55. What can I be doing for my own career for the next decade or so to help increase some income so that we can, because I do think a house would be a good thing for you. For retirement, owning a home would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what was your income last year? Personally, you?
Minimal. Yeah. I do dog sitting, pet sitting in my neighborhood.
Got it.
We have one car. It's an old car, 1976. We didn't decide to upgrade because it's not something that's practical and has a return.
Right. So,
however, it will once we work on the car.
Right. But so, I mean.
And no children at home, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So yeah.
You need to go to work.
Yeah.
You got to get a full-time job.
Yes.
And then you got to get two, not high-end cars, but two cars and then a home after that. And I would do it in that order.
That's why I'd be looking more inward at this point saying, I'm Lori. What can I do to enhance my career? How am I uniquely wired? What has my history been? What is my skill set? You've got them. I don't know your whole background, but you've got them. I guarantee it. And don't think you don't, even if you took a lot of time off work raising kids, or I don't know your background, but I'm just saying that you can still add a lot of value in the marketplace.
And I would go that job, two new used cars, not new cars, but used cars, inexpensive to run and operate. And then a home would be the third thing on the list.
Yeah.
So appreciate the call.
Yeah, I wish you well, Lori. And but by the way, and I know we sometimes promote things on the our show about something on ourselves, whatnot. But we have not only do we have workshops that we talk about periodically, we'll pitch you got to come to our workshop. They're great, which they are. But we also have a webinar. We have a bunch of different webinars, but we have a webinar one that we've a newer one that we put together. It's 15 minute long.
It's a little long in terms of, I shouldn't say that. It is, it's the appropriate length to get through the subject matter of planning for your retirement.
A little long.
Well, as I changed them, I changed it. Most people wouldn't.
15 minutes.
Wow.
A 15-minute retirement plan.
I guess that's not very long.
No. When you talk about planning the rest of your life.
Yeah. I guess if it was a travel video, you'd spend a half hour on it. It is a retirement video, so you shouldn't put nearly as much time in.
So, anyway, it's the our 7 personal decision point webinar, 15 minutes long. You'll find it if you go to HansonMcLean.com. Our learning library has got a ton of different resources, and this is one.
Starring me.
Starring
Pat McClain.
Oh, yeah. We're starring Pat.
Not even a cameo by Scott Hansen. Just all me. Right? 100% me.
Is that right? What did they put together?
I remember doing it a few weeks ago. But take the time. It will help you better understand your retirement planning process.
Here's what's interesting. Look, people procrastinate on planning their retirement. And for years, so when we started Hanson McLean, almost 25 years
ago. It's scary.
There's a variety of reasons. But what we found is when people come to us a couple years before they retire, meet with our advisors, meet with us, and help. We can give them some advice to get them set for retirement. They are better prepared at time of retirement.
That's correct.
But most people don't take that time until it's right at the end.
Most people that retire comfortably start saving as much as they can as early as they can.
I'll agree with that.
So most people that retire comfortably, what they have in common is...
There's no question. They're good savers.
They started saving early on.
Saving's always been a priority in their family.
They try to understand their investments. They try to invest appropriately. They never got too carried away with putting too much risk in the portfolio. But there's typically at the age of somewhere between 53 to age 60, they'll step back and say, I've been doing this the whole time. I think I'm ready. I'm not sure if I'm ready. Am I ready? That's really where it comes down to.
Some do, but here's a prime example. So in the last 3 months, Hanson McLean has had 2 different workshops at 2 different industries, 2 different companies. Okay? In 2 different parts of the... I'm not going to bring the company, but one was a company that was... There was going to be a massive reduction of employees in the next year and a half. They were essentially moving jobs to far, far away. So your choices were either retire, leave and go do something else...
Or move,
right? So we did a workshop for this particular company... Put together one email, literally one email and one long thing online for people to register. We had tons of people, dozens and dozens, sign up in the first week before we even had this thing, right?
Okay.
There was another company that had 5 times as many employees with the age. If you look at the number of employees over 60, it was massive.
Mm-hmm.
Did a workshop, same sort of retirement workshop.
And the response?
Tepid. And so it was funny talking to the person at Hanson McLean who's in charge of doing these things. He was kind of perplexed about it. And I said, the issue is everyone knows they need to deal with it, but most people don't want to deal with it unless they're absolutely forced to. If you know your job's going away in 18 months.
You're forced to.
But if you think, you know, I'm 66 today, I'm 67, I know I need to retire at some point in time, I've got some money saved up, but heck, my company still needs me.
And I could work till I'm, name a day.
Whatever. But you're not doing yourself any favors by not sitting down with a good financial advisor. I'm just saying, after the number of years that we've been doing this, whether it's a Hanson McLean advisor, of course, we're biased to our advisors. We got a great team of folks, or another certified financial planner who specializes in retirement.
What percentage of the clients come into our office that don't become clients right away because they're 3 to 5 years of retirement.
Huge.
And we encourage that. Why? The earlier you start in the process with a firm like ours, the better off you are. We'll allocate your 401k for you, or your 403b. We'll make recommendations on paying down debt. We're patient. We know you're going to retire at some point.
And we'll make
in
it
time.
Easy and painless.
And our hope is that when you go to retire, that we manage your money, but we'll make it easy and painless.
But I just, it is.
So go to our website, start with the 7 personal decision points.
The 15-minute webinar.
Yeah.
Yeah, start there if you want.
It's easy. Non-threatening.
Come to one of our workshops some point in time.
If you don't
visit with
like
one of our
the
advisors.
7 personal decisions, send me an email. Hey, Pat, go back to the beauty school. Or why don't you
beauty
go back
school.
To be...
Go back to selling cacti at the farmer's market.
Oh, we're not
going to
bring up all the 2,700 jobs
I
had
before.
We
years ago. Anyway, meet with an advisor if you're anywhere near retirement age. I mean, seriously, it's just interesting to see how people procrastinate. We got to take a quick break. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join Hanson McLean. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
All right, welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
You know, Pat, 1-888-2-HANSON is our number to join us. 1-888-2-HANSON. I'd love to take a call. Numerically, by the way, it's 1-888-242-6766. So I was thinking the other day, things have clearly changed in financial services for investors over the last 25 years or so since I've been in the business. I was just thinking the other day, what things have changed and what things have stayed the same, right?
Yeah.
So really not much. And if some things have changed, but investor behavior hasn't really changed a lot. But what has changed when I started back in the industry in 1990, most people bought front-loaded mutual funds for their investments.
Yeah.
A lot of 401ks had expensive mutual funds in them.
Yep. If you were to buy a stock, you had to buy them in round numbers. Or you'd
That's
have to pay a
right.
big premium.
Under the 100, yeah.
Or you'd have to
commissions
pay a premium
were expensive.
Commission. Commissions were much more expensive. The cost of trading.
There was no online. Back
then. Also known as friction. How'd you like to be in an industry of what you do for a living is called friction?
I think some people describe us as that still today, Pat.
Well, I guess you're right.
No, I mean.
We charge a fee. It's friction.
So we've had the advent of the ETF. People move more.
Which means exchange-traded fund, which is very similar to a mutual fund. It's just traded a little bit differently.
Which could either be good for the consumer or bad, depending on how they're utilized.
Yes.
Same thing with a lot of financial products. Trading costs have come down dramatically. People trade online. You can trade on your phone now. But really—
Access to information versus 25 years ago— You can do.
That's true.
You have as much access to research as most analysts.
That's right.
Have, which was unheard of 25 years ago.
I remember when Pat and I used to do the program. I forget what time it was back those days, but one of us would go to buy Barron's magazine to get the updated weekly numbers.
Yes, early in the morning.
Yeah, we
right?
are standing old. Right, we would.
Did you get Barron's down there? I'd ride my bike down there, my Stingray.
With the banana seat.
My banana seat after I was through delivering the papers. So,
but what hasn't changed?
Those are things that make access to information easier.
Here's what I've
it's
seen
driven
hasn't
cost
changed.
Down. What hasn't changed? What,
as an advisor who's been counseling people for decades on this, people's view of the markets that when we're in times of where prices are going higher, people get more excited and want to buy more. They view risk as less. And when things are going poorly, they run it high. So I just remember in the 90s, the stock market was going gangbusters, right? It was phenomenal. People just kind of wanted to increase their stocks more and more. They wanted more growth stocks in the portfolio. Then we had the dot-com thing blow up. We had 3 bad years of markets. The stock market, by the way, between 2000 and 2002 fell, the broad stock market, S&P 500, fell about 45%. That's if you were highly diversified amongst the S&P 500. If you were more weighted in
that
the growth.
That was between 2000 and 2002.
If you were more in the growth stocks and the tech stocks, you had a much
greater. What was the NASDAQ was down at one point in time?
70% or
something. Yeah, it was north of 70.
Went from
65.
The index was over 5,000, went below
2,000.
Yeah. Massive if you were heavily weighted in tech. And, of course, we saw the industry come up with all these great tech funds right before the peak. Then we had the financial crisis. We had the real estate prices run up. We had stocks run up again. 2007, things looked all rosy. And I remember people would call the program and talk about, hey, how long do we need to own a home before we can claim the $250,000 exemption? We just bought it 2 weeks ago. And we're like, well, what makes you think you're going to get a gain on it? Like, what? Right? Because things were going up.
I remember that.
I remember those all the time. Get stuff like that. People want to talk about how to exchange their property. And sometimes we're like, whoa, you can get how much for that property? Why don't you just sell it and pay the taxes?
Yeah.
So they doing all kinds of
crazy things. Hasn't changed is investor psychology.
It really hasn't.
Right?
And that's the biggest issue of it all. I mean, it really is. The biggest thing is how the choices you make with your own portfolio.
How you decide where the dollars are going to be directed.
Because if you look at how investors do over the long term, most investors do not perform well. Look at the Dalbar studies. You've accessed the information. Go Google investor performance yourself. You'll see. For most people, it's not good. So
because they most investors don't actually have a strategy or they're not using modern portfolio theory.
Or have some plan as a strategy.
Yes, as to how it's going to be managed.
Yeah, which I think a strategy that you stick through is probably more important than the perfect strategy. Because really, there's no such thing as a perfect strategy. Anyway, we're going to head back to the phones. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to be part of Hanson McLean. In Sacramento, talking with Jasmine. Jasmine, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, Pat and Scott. I have a question this morning. I have about $5,000 in bonds that I received as a child at birth, and I wanted to know when's the best time to cash those in.
How old are you today?
So I'm 26.
Okay.
And I received them in 1990.
So most of these bonds, actually, were these savings bonds? Probably savings bonds. Family member bought them at birth. Yeah, savings bonds. And interest rates were much better back in 1990 when these bonds were purchased than they were today. But a lot of these old savings bonds, Pat, they've had high guaranteed rates of return, like 4%, sometimes higher than that.
But many of them quit paying after 30 years. So she's owned these for 27 years.
Yes, 1990.
Yes.
I would do not, unless you absolutely need the money.
Probably wouldn't touch them.
For another 3 years.
And then at that time, call us back and we'll give you some direction. But they probably got yields on them of 3 or 4+%.
I think 4% is the minimum. You can go on, that matter of fact, you can go online and do some more research. But I mean, unless you have a good use for these dollars elsewhere.
I'd leave them alone.
I mean, it's the rate on them for a guaranteed government
long.
I mean, if you could buy that
at 4% all day long,
but you can. So, anyway, thanks for calling, Jasmine.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, today on Hanson McLean's Money Matters, we've got an interesting guest, Maddie Dykewild. She's co-founder of AgeWave, and Hanson McLean. We've been following some of AgeWave's material and work for a long time back,
years and years.
15 years, maybe something like that. Anyway, she is a real expert on aging, the demographic changes in America, retirement, how the changes of demographics are impacting our retirement, what's happening in our workplace, what's happening in our retirement. And she's really quite fascinating. So, Maddie, thanks for taking some time to be with Hanson McLean today.
I'm glad to be here. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're wonderful. We're actually. It couldn't be much better.
Is it fair to say that what your company does is do demographic and analytic studies of a senior population or a middle-aged population in order to better understand what retirees are going to look like?
Well, that's part of what we do for sure. We do primary research as part of our mission. We're really focused on understanding the demographic shifts overall, how the population overall is aging and what it means for both all of us individually as well as us as a society, because it's really changing who we are as Americans and, frankly, on a global scale. So it's got huge implications and certainly transforms how we think about retirement and what retirement itself really is and what it means.
So question for you, Maddie. You know, people look at life expectancies and they say, well, 100 years ago, the average life expectancy was 35 or whatever the year was, right? But a lot of us didn't make it to adulthood, or something would wipe us out in our midlife. As far as those that made it to old age, are we really living that much longer today, or is it just that most of us are making it to old age?
Well, that is such a good question, and it's something that most people get really confused about. So our mortality rates have, in fact, improved, as you just said. So, for instance, in the past, many women in particular, died in childbirth.
That's right.
During the process of giving birth, they died, and that lowered the general life expectancy pretty dramatically. But just think about it this way. 100 years ago, average life expectancy, so that's the average, was only 47. Now, today, it has gone all the way up to, on average, 78, with women living longer than men. So that's a pretty dramatic, that's a 30-year life expectancy jump in just one century.
But
amazing.
And the average life expectancy of a 50-year-old 100 years ago was probably just, I don't know, less than 10 years, where now it's probably 25 or 30 years.
Yeah, exactly. You totally get it.
Well, yeah. You know, it's interesting because sometimes we'll talk to someone who's 60 or 65, and they'll mention an average life expectancy. We say, whoa, wait a minute. If you've made it to 60 or 65.
Your average life expectancy is not an average life expectancy.
Yeah.
You have to look at a life expectancy from
exactly
someone your age.
It goes all the way up into the 80s. You know, I'm sure anecdotally, we've all heard lots of people living into their 90s and even up to 100. A child born today is probably going to have a life expectancy of at least 100 years. And that's assuming no big breakthroughs.
Yeah, I read recently that in Japan, the prime minister would send a note to someone on their 100th birthday, and they quit doing it because there were so many of them.
Yeah.
And Japan has a higher life expectancy than the United States. And by the way, because they have a very low birth rate, it's creating a tremendous stress on their entire society, much bigger than the stress we have on our society.
And they don't have the immigration in Japan. No. We're off of subject grossly now, but we're going to talk about. But Maddie, right? We don't. But there is so much talk about how bad immigration is in the United States. But the reality, if you look at countries where the birth rate has fallen and the immigration is not there, the economies don't do well.
Well, we're off point, but let me answer your question. You're 100% right. Yeah, I mean, we need the infusion of young, especially well-educated people into our society to help sustain and pay for the aging of our society.
Couldn't agree more.
So you guys have done tons of studies, and I'd encourage any of our listeners to go to AgeWave's website, which you can get a link right through Hanson McLean's.
But Maddie, you used the word primary. Can you explain to our listeners what primary research is versus secondary research?
Oh, that is such a good question. Okay, secondary research is pretty, I mean, any of us do it every day by going on Google, for instance. You can put out a subject and try to gather all the information that's already in existence on a particular subject. Let's just take the subject of aging. I mean, there's tons and tons of material out there, and you go through it all and you come up with, this is all the secondary research that exists on the subject. Primary research is when you go out and you find out new information for the very first time or confirm existing information. So, for instance, we do surveys with thousands of people throughout the country. We do focus groups. We speak to experts. Other experts besides ourselves. I mean, we try to put our hands around a subject from a slightly different perspective, trying to gather new information and put a new face on maybe an old subject or a subject that has not been explored very fully before.
You know, Manny, one thing, obviously we look a lot of read a lot of retirement articles and look at research being in the financial services industry.
I'm sure.
And most women become widowed or in their lifetimes, right?
That's true.
And many of them don't have the same economic powers as men have coming in. How have you seen things change over the last 10 or 20 years when it comes to women in retirement?
Oh, wow. Well, this is a huge subject on its own, and I'd love to talk to you about it in depth sometime because, you know, I'll answer your question, but I want to say that it's a really complex question. But simply put, the women in the later years, especially widowed women, are both the wealthiest and the poorest segment of our society. As crazy as that sounds, that is the truth. They have very large, there's a segment of the population of women who are very affluent and who have all the resources, whether they earn them themselves, but more likely either inherited them from their family or from their husbands. On the other hand, women, especially women living in poor urban centers, are the poorest segments of society and really need our help.
Mm. Well, all right. This recent study you guys did, we'll actually get to that. So,
yeah, we could talk forever.
I know.
Oh, I know. Well, actually, obviously, it's something we both have a great interest in,
Yeah, I mean, we've been helping people transition to retirement for roughly 25 years, and we've just noticed how things have changed, and people's views of retirement have changed.
And in points in time, Maddie, on points in time, it almost sometimes turns into a counseling where you just give people things to think about. You don't tell them what to
do. Money's just one piece of retirement.
Yeah. You don't tell them what to do, but you say, well, have you thought about this or have you thought about that? And money is what they come to us for.
Right.
But you see enough situations where I can't tell you how many people I've told you should probably think about going back and getting a job, either part-time or full-time. And it wasn't to fulfill a money need. It was to fill a psychological or to fill the time more than anything else.
Well, you're giving good advice, and you are already where future advisors really ought to be, because retirement and the financing of retirement is a holistic operation. I mean, it's not just about the money. It's not just about the numbers. It's about how everything in your life, all of your life priorities work together to try to make your life successful, you know, and whatever that means for each of us individually. And just for your point on work, I know going back to work is one of the best things that people can do for themselves. Like, just as an example, not only is it great for your pocketbook, which it is, it allows you to postpone getting into your Social Security and your pension, so you're not living on a fixed income for as long. But even more important, from our studies, we learned that when you ask pre-retirees why they'd work longer, it's for the money. When you ask retirees what's the biggest benefit of working longer, it's for the social connections and the mental stimulation. So, and by the way, finance goes way down the priority list. So, yeah, it's great, but there are other benefits to be reaped that are just as important.
And you find that for some people, does it make a difference whether they're getting paid for that work or not for that work? If money isn't the driving factor, do people feel differently about working for a nonprofit than working for a paycheck?
That's such a good question. You know, it depends what their passions are. I think that there are all different kinds of retirees, just like there's all kinds of people who are in the workforce. Some people have a burning desire, a passion, an issue that they really care about. Let's just take cancer, for instance. Maybe they had a spouse or a friend or a loved one who passed away, and they want to get on that bandwagon, and they want to take their skill set. Maybe they were in PR or education, and they want to take that skill set and apply it to a nonprofit, and they don't care whether they're getting paid with dollars because they're getting paid psychically. On the other hand, there's some other people that say, hey, my value, I feel my value by a paycheck. Mm. And it doesn't have to be a big paycheck, but I need some kind of remuneration to make me feel like I'm valuable. So it's really very individual, and it's also based, you know, like it or not, on need. I mean, most of us have not planned for a 25, 30-year retirement.
That's right.
That's a long, long, long retirement, no matter how much money you have. And, you know, honestly, it's not that easy, and it's a little scary, even for very affluent people. They get scared by, like, am I going to outlive my money? That's, like, the big question. And anything you can do to try to sort of postpone the inevitability of living on a fixed income is very highly appreciated.
You know, it's also interesting as financial advisors, as you mentioned, the people, even affluent people, there are it doesn't matter how much money somebody has. Oftentimes, there's still a bit of insecurity.
Well, yeah, you show me someone that doesn't worry about money, and I'll show you someone that doesn't have any.
Yeah. And so, and sometimes those that were most concerned about retirement have been the biggest savers.
Because
they
worry about it.
They're still really concerned about it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely true.
And Americans as a whole are not saving nearly enough. We all know that. Study after study show that. Some of your research said that there are some trade-offs that Americans would consider to do. And what are some of those trade-offs?
And why aren't they doing that?
Yeah. Yes, even bigger.
Well, let me just put this into a context. First of all, this was based on primary research. So we went out and we talked to more than 50,000 respondents in an in-depth investigation into the changing landscape of retirement. And this took more than 4 years. So this is not...
This is a big study. Big study.
It's a huge study. And we took a more holistic approach. So we didn't want to just look at the numbers or just look at money. We wanted to look at it into the context of your life and your life priorities. Things like family, and as you already mentioned, work and your health, which is a huge issue as you get older, your home, giving, leisure. So we looked at all those things, and what we realized was number one, and this is really important, most Americans are very hopeful, resilient, adaptable, and positive when it comes to retirement. And they're willing to consider a lot of course corrections to enjoy a better, more financially secure retirement. They're very willing to do that. On the other hand, most do not know how much they need to retire. They have no idea. Mm-hmm. They're scared, paralyzed to even try to figure it out. And the one thing that they do know is that it's probably the biggest expense of your lifetime. So that's a lot of information to take in for someone. And it scares people because they don't want to be wealthy, per se. They want to have a sense of peace of mind.
Yeah.
That's very different.
And Maddie, in that survey, did you dig into at all why people won't use an advisor? I have my own opinion that the problem with using an advisor is the average consumer can't tell good from bad, and then they just see bad.
Well, that's certainly part of it. And many people don't think they have enough money to use an advisor. They're scared off by the language of financial services. I mean, seriously, especially women, and women are, you know, they're probably the biggest prime low-hanging fruit market out there for financial advisors. You know, they feel skittish. They feel like they may be taken advantage of. And then you throw in a foreign language filled with bulls and bears. And women in particular, they don't want to talk about bulls and bears. They want to talk about, do I have enough money to send my kids to college? Mm. Will I be able to help my parents out as they get older? Will I be able to retire financially secure and comfortably? I mean, those are the things that drive people. So, yes, they are very skittish. They don't know who to trust.
And they're,
how can they know who to trust?
And they're distrustful of the financial services industry, as they very well should be.
That's right.
I mean, they very well should be. If the financial services industry was the food industry, most of Americans would be dead.
We're hungry anyway.
Poison and everything.
Right?
A little bit of poison and everything.
Just a little bit.
That's, yeah. So you've
it's a little scary.
Maddie, you've been studying this stuff for roughly 30 years. What gets you excited about the future for Americans?
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, I know it sounds crazy that I love the fields of aging.
You sound like you do. I can tell. No, you have a lot of passion.
Who doesn't want to, who is trying to do everything that she can to avoid the bad side of aging.
Yeah, it's going to happen regardless of what you do.
Yeah, it's an inevitability, and the other option ain't so great either, dying. So, yeah, I think that, you know, it requires expectation management for people. That was would be, by the way, the biggest piece of advice that I would give to people. Expect to live to 100. And if you live less than that, great. So I think it's exciting because I'm getting to pioneer new territory, really. So I feel like an explorer, and I'm exploring this really fertile terrain that most of us will go through, but don't have a clue as to how to go through it successfully. And we're digging up the earth and trying to find ways to help people go through this next stage of life more successfully, whether it be, you know, health and finance are the two big, scary pillars that relate to us more and more as we get older. Let's be honest about it.
Obviously.
So, you know, I think it's smart to start thinking about both of those things when you're young, and then on the other hand, to realize it's never too late. Even if you're 50 or 60, you can change the way you eat. You can start doing a little exercise. You can start saving some money and finding ways to course correct along your path to retirement and through retirement.
Well, thank you, Matt. Yes, great.
That's a perfect way to leave this interview since we're out of time. But we could talk to you for an hour, or two or three.
We've been talking with Matty Dykewell. And there's a link right on Hanson McLean's website to Matty and all the work that they do over at AgeWave. So thanks so much for being part of Hanson McLean today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It is interesting how I know a guy, he plans on living to 156.
Okay. I hope that doesn't happen to me.
But he says that because he thinks, somehow believes that with the new what's happened with medicine and the singularity with the technology and medicine all merging together,
that somehow it's going to.
Well, he's hoping he's going to be around long enough so as the new technologies come in place, he's going to be a beneficiary of them.
Well, good for him.
I mean, there might be some kids born today that live to, who knows?
Yeah. All I know is that based on, I don't want to live to 156.
What would I look like at 156?
I have no idea.
I don't like the way I look at 50.
I can't imagine.
Anyway, we've been out of time. Visit HansonMcLean.com and our learning library for lots of great information. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast to get it that way. And we'll see you next week. You've been listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Have a great rest of your day.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.